welcome to another episode of UBC Arts on Air, and I'm your host, Ira Nadell. This evening, the second of a two-part series on graduate students and their intriguing research. And our two guests are Juan Hernandez and Carmen Miranda Barrios, both in the PhD program in Hispanic Studies. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's a great pleasure to have you here. But what I'm really interested in is that the areas you're studying strike me as not being typical for PhD students. So Carmen, let's start with you. Latin American radio and media in Canada. How did you become interested in this subject?
I became interested because I myself am a radio producer. So I have been doing radio since, I can say, the last 14 years. I do it in a voluntary basis. And when I came to Vancouver, I find out that this program exists, so of course I joined. And that's how, when I went back to school, I said, why not to study how this program started, how everything happened back in the 70s, and how the radio show I work with is a bilingual radio show, so it's a joint effort by Latin Americans and Anglo-Canadians.
So is part of the show in Spanish and part in English?
Yes.
But does that happen almost at the same time, or do you do the first 10 minutes in Spanish and then 10 minutes in English?
We switch back and forth. We have a new segment, which is Spanish or English, depending who wants to go first. And then we usually conduct live interviews somewhere in Latin America, and those are as well questions in English, Spanish. So that's why I was interested. Why not to see it from my point of view as a student, as a scholar?
Your background is pragmatic. I mean, this is what you have been doing for some years.
Exactly. Yes.
Fascinating. Juan, you're interested in mining and literature. Tell me about this.
Well, my interest came from the experience of living in Vancouver and living in, especially attending UBC campus, which is a beautiful campus, in Vancouver, which is a beautiful city, and trying to find a topic, a PhD dissertation topic, like most of us, really struggle to find what to write about and when to spend 5 years of our lives investigating. So I decided to join my two interests, which were literature, philosophy, politics, and kind of questioning or digging a little bit into the, no pun intended, on the source of the wealth of Vancouver as a global city and of UBC as one of the most known prestigious institutions in Canada and the North, the global North. So that was the idea, try to mix those two and try to see how people in the past, especially in Latin America, had thought or conceptualized, also conceive of extraction, mineral extraction, oil extraction, fossil fuels, so on, through literature. So what are these writers telling us, men, women, Afro-Latin Americans, indigenous Latin Americans, all have written about their experiences from the beginning of the century. So that's kind of the idea of
it sounds vast and a topic that needs a bit of structure. So how are you thinking about this in terms of approaching it via your research and possibly your writing?
Yeah, thanks. That's a good question. I hope it's not too boring to talk about all these future projects, but the other night I was thinking about how to organize it, and I came with the idea of writing chapters by minerals. So I thought, oh, one chapter could be gold. The other chapter could be tin. The exploitation of tin was very important in Bolivia. Another could be nitrates, so salt nitrates and in Chile. So on. I could pick a commodity, let's say, per chapter. And that's one of many ways. But you're right, there's a lot of ways to structure. There's a lot of actors involved in a long period of time, let's say the long 20th century. So I'm still working and struggling through how to organize it through literary periods, through historical periods, through aesthetic currents or movements. There's many ways. This is the first project, the first book length, I hope, investigation on the topic. So I'm kind of like opening a new theme of questioning, right? Through literature, the material structures, and the way capital works.
I'm a little familiar with the subject in English literature, but I have to say in a very limited way, essentially Conrad and Nostromo.
Yes.
What am I missing? Tell me some other titles in Latin American literature or Australian or even Canadian literature. I'm totally unfamiliar with this field.
I was unfamiliar. I'm still unfamiliar for the most part. I've been spending most of my time trying to dig on the or explore on the Latin American subfield. But I've become familiarized with obscure writers that most of the time fit this profile of engineering sent by the Texaco company or by the Dutch royal company in the early 20th century to some foreign remote place like Venezuela, like Kazakhstan, like Australia, like somewhere where there's oil, Ecuador or whatever. And then they tend to become writers or they are sent as doctors and then they see all the bad things that the mistreatment of people, of nature, of resources, the manipulation of politicians. Then they write a novel. When they retire, they tend to write.
So autobiography would be pretty important, I would think.
Most of the time, fictionalized autobiography. Right. There's a few names that I'm coming to my mind right now of an English engineer that wrote about Venezuela in the 1920s, 1930s, and so on. Mining was very, of course, out of my field, very important in North America. And in Australia, of course, big economy based on natural resources, and South Africa. But right now, I'm still struggling with my primary field, I guess, for future projects I can develop on there.
Is there a library, an archive of such material that you could say, here are three places in the world that I can go to in Venezuela, and maybe in New York, and maybe in, I don't know, Sydney, Australia?
No.
No.
No, there's none.
Which makes it more challenging, right?
It is. It is a challenge, and especially a very new topic. People don't think about it in literary ways. They just think about it, oh, corporation versus community or nature versus exploitation. But they don't think from a literary point of view. So it's a challenge to try to figure out, weed out, no? What it's there, what it relates, what it doesn't.
It's the best kind of topic, right? Take you everywhere.
Yeah.
Carmen, I want to come back to you, and I'm curious about the representation of Latin America in the media. Can you offer some insight about that from your direct experience and what you've seen living in Canada?
What I have seen, what I have heard, what I have listened is when the media, let's say CBC or corporate media, when they talk about Latin America, is especially when there is some natural disaster or now the Zika virus is big in the media as well. My research wants to go back to the mid-70s. That was when a lot of exiles came from the South Cone, especially Chile and Argentina. So my studies to see what was what the media was saying about Latin America in that time and also why these guys decided to come together and start working on a radio show themselves with the support of the English community or the Anglo-Canadian community, because the show since its beginning has been bilingual. So I want to know why they went beyond that. Usually when you see ethnic communities, they start a show in their own language, and it's kind of an enclosure. This one, they decided to kind of invite the host country and also being part of that. So what I'm trying to look is what was happening in Vancouver in the 70s and what the exile or the migrants from Latin America brought with them that make them use radio as a way of portraying their identity. Perhaps talking about the human rights abuses during Pinochet dictatorship or in Argentina or after the Guatemalan. So through this project, I can see waves of refugees who came from Latin America to Vancouver. A little bit as Juan Fernando studies that link the exile diaspora with media are almost none there, not out there.
So no, that's no,
trying to get it.
So what about, though, regionally? If you were doing the same project in Montreal, would it be different? Are there, for example, bilingual Spanish-English radio shows in Montreal? Is there a history there?
I am still looking into that, but what I know is that alternative radio is strong in Quebec, in Montreal, and in Vancouver through Vancouver Cooperative Radio. So that's in Quebec. I know there is a lot of community radios, alternative media, But I am still in the process of searching for other things. However, my focus, my region of study is Vancouver.
How do you do research for this?
I'm conducting interviews with people who are still alive and they were part of the process back in the 70s. So I'm doing oral interviews, history oral interviews, and I also have reel-to-reels that I am digitalizing to listen and to get what you were asking me, how they represented themselves. But I had to digitalize that material in order to listen what it was there. I have few tapes, cassettes, but that the material I got are reel-to-reels.
It strikes me with both subjects here, the question of research and archives, because I love archives, and I find I'm excited by what you don't know, but what the archive leads you to. But you're talking about kind of an audio archive.
Exactly.
Right? And that's what you're exploring. Juan, what kind of archives or how are you going about researching this? We spoke a few minutes ago about kind of conceptualizing the project and theorizing elements of it, but on a Tuesday afternoon, and you're sitting down to address, you know, the topic, what are you doing? Or how will you go about it?
I think the best way to think of an archive now dealing with this topic would be to think of mine, where you dig in and looking for little pieces and little, tracking a vein or some kind of clues that lead you, some kind of information that would lead you somewhere. In order to make my life easier and to eventually graduate, which is a problem that we all have here, we eventually need to graduate and start our life. And so in order to do this, I'm trying to focus from the literary point of view. So my corpus, if we can call it that, it was being restricted to novels, short stories, poems, and other type of cultural production of the time, maybe visuals, I'm still not sure, perhaps a few movies, in order to make it doable. Because as you said, and as some professors have said on the program, it is just too much. There is every sort of expression you could imagine if you dig a little bit under the surface. So in some cases there is a lot, in some cases there is not much. In some cases there is a good and bad things that I don't want to waste my time reading or spend my time necessarily. And there's a lot of good things that I found some of them, and I'm still trying to find some of these good things that are there. But it's an archive mission. It's an archive task, like you said. Eventually I have to go there and perhaps, unlike Cartman, to dig a lot more into the written, the letter. But it's a project, as Foucault, I think, reminded us, many, many years ago. That is the excitement about writing a book. You don't know where it leads you. You don't know where life leads you. In a way, if we would have known, it would be not even worth living or maybe boring, right? So we start with ideas A, B, C, and then you finish, Z, E, D, or something really, really off. But at the same time, we all create our sources, we all create our precursors, and we create a kind of a destination where we finally end, And that destination is, at the same time, an opening for more projects, for more books, for another project on radio, for another project on exile, other communities. So that's kind of a never-ending anxiety in humanities.
I understand only too well. But I have to ask both of you, what do you hope to learn from this research and this writing? Carmen, what do you hope to learn from your analysis of the, say, bilingual radio programming in Spanish and English, which has a wonderful history?
I think in my case, what I want to is to document, to understand the resilience, the skills, everything that exiles bring or refugees bring. Perhaps I should say that I came to Canada as a political exile as well. So for me, it has a lot of importance of documenting. There is not much work in academia talking about what we have done as Latin Americans coming here. There are some work, but nothing related to media. For me, it's like adding a little bit more to the work that has already been done by other scholars like Pilar Riaño, who has documented the Colombian situation of displacement and the ones coming to Vancouver. So I think what I want to do is to open this archive and saying, listen, it's possible to work together as well with Anglo-Canadians. They were also struggling in some issues here in Vancouver. It's not that because we're in the first country, there is no problems here. First war, there are non-issues. So it was like a combined thing. So I kind of want to leave that. I say, we can listen, that it's possible to work together even though our differences with language, with culture, but using alternative radio as a way to show how we can portray our messages.
Is there a history of Latin Americans in Canada?
There are studies. It's a lot of work in terms of literature. There is an anthology, in fact, of different Latin American writers. Some of them are Carmen Rodriguez, which is a Vancouverite, and there are others from other parts of Canada. But specifically, more work has been done on the literary area. There are some studies now by Carolina Palacios, for example, who talk about how exiled communities could be places of learning. But as I said, I haven't found anything that really relate to media. What amazes me is that through the interviews I have done with some of the founders of the program and people who join after, the program is almost 4 years old and is still broadcasting live on Saturdays from Cop Radio. It's like how they say, I did it on a volunteer basis, but I had to do it. So that kind of energy that I'm not getting anything like in return in terms of money, but I needed to do it. So I want to question that, why? And this is the time, pre-internet time. So to get news, to get the interviews in dictatorship area was a hard task to do and to come out with a show every Saturday. That's what I want to kind of dig. Mm-hmm. How was it possible to do that? And it was part of a collective effort with both communities.
That's a wonderful explanation. I like that very much because you put your finger on, I think, the critical element, the energy, determination, and absolute commitment. I have to do it. You know, I find the venue that allows me to do this, but that's the important thing, satisfying that desire.
One of my interviewees told me, I said, what's the radio for you? Now on, you started it. What was for you? What does represent? And she said, for me, it's like that public plaza that we have in all Latin American countries. We have a plaza where we go on Saturdays, we meet. In Vancouver, we don't have a plaza. We don't have a public plaza. But for me, the radio is that plaza. She put it metaphorically beautiful, like it's the plaza to know that we're here and what we're doing.
The Study and Go Abroad Fair is back on Thursday, February 25th. Meet face-to-face with top universities from around the world and start planning to travel. Learn about degrees in law, medicine, health sciences, arts, technology, pharmacy, business, hotel management, and much more. Check out our travel zone for volunteering, language programs, adventure travel, and work abroad. For more info, visit studyandgoabroad.com. There's also free admission.
Are you a current UBC grad student? If so, then listen up, because the Graduate Student Society lets UBC grads book rooms and spaces in the newly renovated grad student building. Be sure to take advantage of what the facility has to offer. The rooms come equipped with sound systems and can host up to 300 people. Even better, as grad students, you don't have to pay booking fees. Not a grad? Don't worry. The Tia Corner House is open to the public, as in the Corner Pub, opening earlier next year. For more information, contact booking manager Rob at bookings@gss.ubc.ca.
Juan, I have to ask you the same question. What do you hope to learn from the research you're doing and the future research you'll be undertaking?
Yes, thank you. I really like your metaphor, Carmen, no? In a way, it is kind of the Greek agora that we've lost in the capitalist ordering of society. What I hope to learn is there's many ways to explain it. In a way, it's kind of, just picking up from what Carmen just said, learning about our past through literature, through digging the archives. I think I would do this in a more literary way, of course, through literature, short stories, novels, and other forms, advertisements, and other forms of cultural production. But just learn how a continent could be expoliated and can be just abstracted in the global economic north as a series of commodities, you know, as timber, as gold, as coffee, as diamonds, as sea products, so on, from Mexico all the way to Patagonia. I think the continent was conceptualized as a series of commodities to be exploited, of course, for the global north. So I'm interested in seeing how was that possible and to what extent mineral extraction or oil extraction plays into those narratives. Ultimately, this topic is very important and pertinent today when Canada, no, it's talking about moving forward, when we have an economy that's based on oil, fossil fuels, depending, of course, on the growth of other economies that are not always going to grow at the rate that they have been. So in a way, it ties with something that I've been exploring, that some scholars have been developing in Edmonton and in other universities, which is something they call energy humanities. And energy humanities is really interesting. They have a little manifesto in University Affairs, the magazine, and they talk about how they want to reconceptualize the problem of energy dependence from a non-technical point of view, from a humanities point of view. They think that if we want to move forward, we cannot sustain the style, the mode of life that we have. So they argue that to move forward in a sustainable way, it means not also to find new technologies for energy, but also to change our habits, to, in a way, change our consumption, change our pleasures, change the effect that comes with energy, with driving a car and having that sense of independence, not to forsake all those things, but perhaps to rethink how to live in a more sustainable way, including a change in our relation to nature, not just throwing the task back to some scientists and say, hey guys, find a way for us to keep this spectacularly, you know, wasteful way of life, but saying perhaps we need to do that with the scientists, but at the same time change our life or styles of consumption, of patterns, and everything that comes that comes with oil and the beautiful, no, in a way, beautiful independence and mode of living that oil has permitted to exist, especially in the North American countries. So, in a way, to wrap it up, there's many, many things that you can learn. But also, Canada being such a big mining country, it's not only pertinent, but it's kind of urgent, no, to kind of investigate, no, beyond the surface. No? So, many, many, many ways related to the way in which we conceive ourselves in the futures, but also through investigating a little bit of the past in terms of what gives us energy and in what way can we change that dependency from those sources for the future.
I understand. So you've covered a lot of ground. But my sense is that at least when you sit down to write the dissertation, do you intend to have some commentary which is economic and social and historical as perhaps a prelude to the analysis of the literature? In other words, contextualizing it.
Yes, of course. Yes.
And do you want that to be like a history of just what you were describing, a history of extraction and its downside?
It could be that. This is where the organization of a dissertation project comes in, and it's not necessarily my forte. But yes, I think there's many ways of organizing it, and there's many ways of pitching this topic. You can pitch it to a North American audience, to a South American academia. I can pitch it to a North American wider public, not necessarily academia related or restricted. So there's many ways. But in a way, I plan to do this. I plan to set up an explanation on the literary movements that I think this mining literature touches on. But at the same time, of course, contextualize it, like you were saying, not for the global north, no, specifically. And my work would probably not be alone, dancing by itself. There's many, many, many works that have already been doing this, a few works, not many. Anthropologists have started to write the history of oil, how it's into everything. It's not like filling your gas, but it's into this microphone, into this chair, into the whole world, into the way we are here living. You know, it's in ourselves. So this global warming, oil dependency, oil life is not going anywhere for now, and we haven't come to terms with it. Philosophy hasn't studied this, literature hasn't dealt with this. So it's a very, very, very wide and a new field that touches on many, many fields. But in a way, it's very exciting, no? And I think I'm not alone doing this. There's people in McGill doing some work on Latin American mining. There's people in Edmonton. There's people in the States, so I guess my work would like become part of this constellation of new works.
Sounds very, very exciting. So as we're sort of wrapping up, I must ask each of you, how are you going to translate these ideas into the classroom? Say 5 years from now, you've completed, you've graduated, you're teaching. what do you hope to convey in the classroom?
I think just having the audio materials to bring the real to real kind of, I would love to kind of create a historical course on the use of media in Latin America. As Juan Carlos is saying, of course, literature has the trope of radio in it. There are novels, testimonies talking about the use of radio in the times of war, for example, in El Salvador. So I would like to create a course on the history of radio, how radio is used, as we see with the advance of technology, one medium that people are listening to us through could be online, could be on their transmitter. Radio hasn't been kicked out of the... I don't know how to say it. We still use the radio. I still have my radio on my kitchen. I always listen to that. I believe many Canadians or many people in Canada listen to the radio. So it's a medium that has survived. But I would like to bring to the class the importance of this medium and how people can use it to bring their own ideas, their own narratives, that is possible to use it, is accessible to use it. And in fact, in terms of mining, there are now a project that I'm kind of helping a little bit in San Marcos with indigenous communities who are already creating their own bilingual clips of radio in MAM and Spanish, talking about the negative effects of mining in this area in Guatemala. So it's a powerful tool. So I would like to bring that to the classroom, and perhaps students can also create their own documentaries. I love making documentaries. So I think that's kind of my, I would love to do it. And hopefully, yes, we'll be in less than 5 years that we will be using it in the classroom. But for sure, I think this gives us a lot of, it's like a mine, as you put it, like we can use it, a lot of resources to put it in the classroom.
Juan, do you agree? Is that kind of 5 years from now in the classroom?
First, we need to get a job.
That's another interview.
That's another interview, right?
Yeah, I went into that. Thank you, Carmen. Yeah, I think we can relate us to topics there in teaching. I mean, there's many ways that I could do a syllabus. This is the official question to your answer. Many ways that I can do a syllabus based on literature, Latin American literature, 20th century, beyond magical realism, beyond Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and beyond what we know already. So in a way, that would be interesting to find a way to do Latin American literature that, hey guys, let's explore the novel of the jungle, let's explore the novel of mining, let's explore the Pablo Neruda poems about the Standard Oil, the Rockefeller empire. Let's explore his poems about the miners in the north of his country. So there's so many ways of exploring kind of the commodity novel, which as some critics have called it. But in a way, going back to Carmen, I think it's really interesting that mining and radio come together, especially because radio is kind of the internet of the poor, where in countries where the state has a monopoly on media, communities organize around radio. They send messages to each other. They say, we're going to be here, we're going to do some resistance to this mining project, or we're going to organize a kitchen, a community kitchen. So in a way, radio is an understudied, I think, undervalued tool, and at the same time, a concept of a study, no? So there's projects that are not too far from each other, and I like this opportunity to kind of realize and talk more about our projects and about the intersections that we find there. So thank you. Thank
well,
you for bringing us.
I really have to thank both of you because you are wonderfully articulate, both of you. Left us with wonderful metaphors, the public plaza, the mind. I never quite thought of the radio as the internet of the poor, but you explain that very, very well. And I think, in a way, reconstitute the value of radio, which people in North America take for granted or think there's only one thing that radio does here, play music. So I want to thank both of you, our two wonderful graduate students, Carmen Miranda Barrios and Juan Hernandez, both in Hispanic Studies here in the Faculty of Arts at UBC. And stay tuned for more exciting profiles of the always fascinating members of UBC's Faculty of Arts. Thank you both again.
Thank you,
Ira.